What has to happen to fix Joburg is first the voters must decide they want to fix it. If they're carrying on voting for the ANC, well, then there's no chance. But Johannesburg is deeply, deeply broken, with an army of cadres deployed into the government who will be working hard to get any government that disrupts their enrichment process to fail.
So I wanted to chat to you, Helen, about the opening of your councillor selection process. I see the closing date is at the end of April, and I just wanted to get your first sense of how things are going. Do people want to serve their country and be councillors?
Well, I'm delighted to say yes. We had the first day of our Catalyst retreat yesterday, and that was in Johannesburg, and I was really blown away, I can say, by the caliber of people who are putting their hats into the ring.
I'm not asking for names, but just tell me about the kind of people, because the last time I came to a DA press event where you were introducing the cream of the crop last year, there were doctors and PhDs and people who had really come forward and said, we want to serve our country, in that case, as members of national parliament or of the provincial legislatures. So just give us a flavor for the kinds of people coming forward for, I'd argue, a much more difficult job.
Yes, in many ways, it is a much more difficult job because it really is the coalface of politics, of the coalface of delivery failure, if you will, in South Africa. So I was thrilled to see that we have lawyers. We even had an accountant, a tax consultant. We had a range of people who actually know that this is the last chance for a city like Johannesburg and are going to do everything in their power to help save it. So there are people very committed to do that. Senior people, some with very high public profiles, who are committed to doing that.
I was also listening to you and reading the call, and you said that the DA hopes to achieve a majority in the local government election in 2026 or early 2027. That's going to be quite a jump, and I wondered if you could share with us some of your strategy to go from what you achieved in 2024 to going to 51% plus in 2026, early 2027.
Well, what I have been saying is that we want to be the biggest party in the metros.
Okay.
And we are in we want to be the biggest party in the metros. We are in a proportional representation system, which means it's very rare for any party anywhere in a proportional representation system to get above 50%. I think it's not likely to happen in South Africa again in the near future. The critical question is who's going to be the biggest party? And indeed, I think the DA stands a very good chance in most of the major metros of being the biggest party. And we are going to go all out for an overall majority in Cape Town again.
I remember you have told me this before, that you think our political landscape has changed so substantially that no party, be it in a local, national or provincial election, will be able to achieve 51% again. Is this because we've seen so many more parties coming into registering and coming onto the political scene? Or do you think that people are just searching all over for a political home? How have you come to that conclusion?
Well, it is the consequence of having a proportional representation system without thresholds. In most proportional representation systems throughout the world, it is very big to be a party in the 20s. We'll remember that Angela Merkel was the Chancellor of Germany for a very long time with 27, 28% of the vote. And that's absolutely normal in a proportional representation system. So, for example, in Ireland, a sister party of ours with the very same political philosophy has got the same percentage of the vote, but they're the governing party there because they're the biggest party. But we're in a situation that is even more encouraging of tiny parties starting up because we don't have any thresholds. In Germany, for example, you have to get 5% of the vote before you get any seats whatsoever. And that means that this time the Liberals fell out of the Bundestag, the parliament, altogether because they only got 4.7% of the vote. So we don't have any thresholds at all, which means that with 2,000 votes, you can get a seat in the council of a large metropolitan area. And you can even have the balance of power there to decide which party will actually rule. So we don't believe that that's democratic. And so we are bringing in thresholds, and we're certainly working very hard to have them in before the next local government election. But despite that, we will have a multiplicity of parties. And if the DA can be the biggest party, then we get to have the first go at setting up a municipal government. And that's what we're aiming at.
You've spoken about the DA difference. And at the weekend, this is just before we're speaking, we went to the Garden Route. So there really is a difference palpable if you see George and if you see Knysna, if you see Cape Town and if you see Johannesburg. So when I run this theory by my friends, they say, oh, nonsense, because you're only looking at the smart parts of those places. You're not looking at the black areas. How would you answer that critique and also expound for us a little bit on how you understand that DA difference?
Well, you've got to ask yourself what government is supposed to do. What government is supposed to do at local level is to deliver clean water, make sure the sewage can flush away, make sure that the electricity network is functioning, make sure that refuse is removed, make sure that the roads are fixed, make sure that there's public transport, viable and functional, happening. Those are the roles of municipal government. And I've often taken people around very poor communities in the past, and they can see for themselves that the local state is working there. The city of Cape Town, for example, but all the other DA municipalities as well, deliver the services they are supposed to deliver to the poor especially. In Cape Town, for example, 75% of the 9 billion rand investment in infrastructure is going directly to benefiting the poor. And the infrastructure spend on the city of Cape Town is now more than all the other metros put together. Now, that creates absolute certainty for the future that water will be clean, that it will be delivered in large parts of Johannesburg. It isn't delivered to anybody. That the network is working, that independent power producers can feed into the network to cross-subsidize what the poor have to pay for electricity. On every single measure in the poorest parts of Cape Town, the local state is fulfilling its function. And the same goes for almost every place governed by the DA with an overall majority, because then that makes it much easier to deliver, of course.
Does it have the impact of mediating a wider Gini coefficient or wealth inequality in a city like Cape Town? Because it is still pretty glaring. And the question I asked the Cape Town Mayor, Jordaniel Lewis, when we spoke is, if a city is working well, it seems to almost accentuate your Gini, because the parts that which are driving the growth of the city and where the private sector is really putting in big money, they grow exponentially. And so it almost feels like Khayelitsha's, the Cape Flats, are not keeping up with that growth. Can a local government budget have such a mediating effect on a Gini coefficient, or is that too big an ask for at local government level?
Now, of course, local government can have a big impact on the Gini coefficient, because the biggest impact on the Gini coefficient is when people have jobs. When they have jobs, the Gini coefficient reduces. Now, why do people invest in a certain area and open businesses and open factories and create jobs? They do that because they have confidence in the future there. And to have confidence in your future, you at least have to have the surety of clean running water, the surety of reliable electricity, the surety of public transport, the greater surety, at least, of public safety, and all of those things. And those things only come with good local government. And so you have good local government, there's more investment, there's more growth, and there are more jobs. That's why most of the jobs created in any city are created with the DA governments. And that brings down the Gini coefficient.
I do want to ask you a little bit about Joburg, because I know that you lived here. I know your family. I don't know if they're still here, but I know they were from here. And I wondered, and you spend a lot of time here now because getting ready for this local government election. What do you see when you drive about, walk about, open your eyes to local government in the city?
Well, the first thing that is very, very noticeable is the decay. Broken sidewalks, grass growing out of everything, litter everywhere, broken transformers. And then the next thing you notice, of course, is the traffic lights that aren't working. You know, that is really a very, very striking thing. I mean, I'm sure there are more traffic lights working in Khayelitsha and Gugulethu than there are in the whole of Johannesburg, for example. It's very
frustrating. Well, I count these things. So there are literally thousands of traffic lights not working. We have 2,000 intersections. Multiply by four. Yeah, thousands don't work.
Well, that is a tragedy, an absolute tragedy for Johannesburg, because that's what makes people run away. I mean, if that's what you have and you have weeks in some places without water, weeks, who's going to invest in a place like that?
I've held roundtables on this. I get about in my city a lot. And the pent-up investment waiting to happen is quite significant. You know, people still want to invest here. They're often not able to because the metro center's been shut down. And so getting your plans passed, being able to get your infrastructure up and running takes that much longer. I've heard you say in your various conversations about local government that the fix on Johannesburg will take at least 5 years, so that even if the DA is successful in the next election, don't expect any big visible changes. So, but to someone who lives here, 5 years seems like an extraordinarily long time.
Well, what has to happen to fix Joburg is first the voters must decide they want to fix it. If they're carrying on voting for the ANC, well, then there's no chance, but that's a decision the voters have to make. If they continue not putting a party in that has the capacity and the competence to govern, then that's their choice, and they are voting for their city to collapse. There's no other way of putting it. It is as stark as that. If they want to turn it around, it is their choice. It is the voters' choice to do that, and they must make that choice. No one else can make it for them. We're putting up the very best candidates we can. We're training them very hard. We'll have an enormous amount of support from our governance units and other places to fix Joburg, because we love Joburg and we're very committed to fixing it. But it's a choice the voters have to make first. If they do make that choice, it's going to take a very, very long time from the residents' perspective to fix it. Because, first of all, there's been so much corruption that there's not the money that we've now had in Cape Town through good governance to pour into the infrastructure investment that's needed. And fixing the traffic lights, for example, is just not a question of putting a new globe in the light or a new bulb in the light. It's about fixing the entire network of cables that hasn't been maintained for the past 30 years. So it's not a quick fix. It's an extraordinary challenge. We were lucky when we took over Cape Town, it wasn't nearly as broken as Johannesburg is. But Johannesburg is deeply, deeply broken, with an army of cadres deployed into the government who will be working hard to get any government that disrupts their enrichment process to fail. And it's going to be very, very hard. We're going to have a backbone of steel to turn Johannesburg around. But first, the voters, as I said, have to have a backbone of steel
to make the choices. So I want to chat very quickly about this is a big job, you know, being a councillor. You outline it as legislative work, council committees, community leadership. So you've got to be in your wards, civil society engagement. You've got to be speaking to all the various sectors of civil society. You have to do ward representation, local issue management, and then also, you have to do party work. I find that a really huge job description for local councillors, and it helps me understand why so very few of them shine from across parties. It's just a massive job. Isn't it a little bit too big?
Well, many of them do shine. We've got some outstanding councillors, and if somebody is really committed to doing the job, which is a calling, it is not a career. It is absolutely a calling, and now more than ever before, to rescue Johannesburg. Yes, we need those people. That's why we do such a massive search beyond the boundaries of our current members to get in the very best people who prepare to do the job. It is a huge job. I was a councillor myself once, And it is.
Were you a councillor? I've almost forgotten that. Hey?
Yes, I was. I couldn't have been the mayor if I wasn't a councillor. So I was.
That's
a councillor.
True. That's true. And do you? I mean, is it just tell me a little bit about how that is? So people are calling you all the time. You've got to be doing party work. You have to do council work, which means making laws and also oversight work if you're not in the government. Share a little bit of what that experience was like.
Well, it is an extraordinarily enriching experience because you know that you're making a difference. Often in parliament or the province, you are at a remove that makes it difficult to see the impact of your work. But at local government level, you usually can see the impact of your work, and you have to work very closely with the officials and the depot managers and other people who are going to be prepared to help you get things fixed up in your ward. It can be very frustrating in an ANC-governed municipality where everything is broken and where none of the officials want to help you. But our best people keep soldiering on, because they know that they really stand between Joburg and its total collapse, and they're trying to prevent that. They respond to their constituents all the time, usually on WhatsApp groups, and they endure the most horrific abuse on those WhatsApp groups that you can even imagine. It's quite extraordinary how people become keyboard warriors when they are in a WhatsApp group and can attack other people from some kind of relative anonymity. It is extraordinarily distressing to see that. But anybody in politics in South Africa has to get used to that. You've got to build a backbone of steel, as I said, and you've got to be able to take that. They respond to calls at all hours of the day and night. They try to get the water infrastructure maintained and push very, very hard to get things fixed. Sometimes they burn out. Sometimes some of our best councillors have burnt out, but there are always people passionate enough to take their place.
I did want to put this to you, is I've stayed in wards where there are brilliant DA councillors, and my mom lives in a ward where there was somebody who was not. He was as open to patronage politics and influence building and behaving like a cadre with access to power as any ANC councillor whom we read about all the time. How do you deal with that risk, and are you aware of it?
Well, that's why we have such intensive candidate selection processes. If there are examples of that, you and your mother and other people must inform us with some evidence, because it can't just be a broad generalization or accusation.
No, we did. Huh?
Okay, to the DA. Did you let the DA know?
Yes, absolutely. And it's not like nothing happened. There was an inquiry, etc. I'm just making a general point to you.
Okay, you're just making a general point. But if we know that, and if the person is found guilty of doing something like that, then that goes on their record. And we have performance assessments in the DA, and that should count very strongly in the candidate nomination process. So we do have very close monitors on that. And sometimes people face disciplinary action, where the penalty is not as severe as loss of membership or being kicked out of the party, but we take a very, very firm view on corrupt behaviors, and certainly when there's evidence of it.
I have a final question, and I'm really sorry that I have to run off to do a slot on Johannesburg, which I do, but it is this one. Today is 269 days since the GNU was formed. And I do just want to get your opinion on how you think things are going, because it was an agreement struck in very quick time, and it won adherence across the world. The German ambassador the other day was saying to us that, wow, we can learn a thing or two from South Africa about how to establish a coalition government in such a short period of time. You were, of course, one of the key midwives of that process. I'd love to get your thoughts on how you think it's going.
Look, you know, we can learn a lot of things from Germany, because they are much more detailed in their coalition negotiations, and they aren't constrained by the constitution to only having 2 weeks to negotiate it, which was far too little. We should have had much, much longer. Look, I would say in general, we are fighting as hard as we can and winning as many victories as we can on the basis of 22% of the vote. There's some people who think that we should win 100% of the battles, which we obviously can't, because we didn't get 50% plus one of the vote. And when we do that, we will be able to win 100% of the battles. But the ANC can't win 100% of the battles either, and they're finding it very, very difficult to get used to that fact. And they're kicking back very hard against it. So on things like the Bella Act, the NHI, the Expropriation Act, all of those acts were actually passed in the last parliament. All that was waiting was for the president's signature, and that gave us very little ability to fight back and to turn things around, because it was only the president's signature and it was hard to stop that. But with a budget, for example, that wanted to push up VAT to 17%, well, we fought back on that very hard, and those negotiations are still ongoing. It's taken almost as long to negotiate that budget as it has to negotiate the entire new coalition government. But where we have the votes in parliament and where the ANC has to rely on us before they can take a position on something, we have much more muscle, which we're doing our best to use as hard as we can, on the understanding that no one must expect us to win everything until they give us enough votes.
Got you. Thank you very much for your time. I do hope that you'll join us on another of these chats, because it's always lovely to talk to you. Thank you, Helen.
Thank you very much indeed, Ferial. I appreciate it.